are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are indeed. We are back.
We're back and we're bigger than ever.
Yeah?
Yes, we are.
Why is that?
I don't know. I always say
good.
That. I always say that. I'm back and I'm bigger than ever. That's a nice shirt.
It's a plaid shirt.
It is.
It's kind of the thing now in menswear, isn't it?
You don't normally. I mean, nothing against it. Yeah. It looks great on you, but you're not really a plaid. I don't think I've ever seen you wear plaid.
I don't think I ever have.
Or tartan. I've always wondered what's the difference: plaid, tartan, plaid, checked.
Isn't tartan specific to Scottish plaid?
I don't know.
I've never even heard that word.
Yeah,
you're making it up, aren't you?
Tartan.
I've never
heard tartan.
I was going to say, I'm just happy you didn't direct that comment towards me.
Look, you would
just wait.
She comes. In, she takes off all her clothes. She said, "What's going to be?
What kind of show is this?"
I don't know.
You'll have to come and see.
See, this is what happens, Michael, when you breeze in moments before you go on
there.
My
goodness, I ran into it. I have a reason, but
okay. Well, tell us about it. But first, let's thank the sponsors.
Exactly. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We are grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Indeed we are. And you know, the first association between LA's prestigious Falcon Theater, Paul, which is something of a subject matter today, and the Looking Glass Theater Company of Chicago, the 2011 recipient of the Tony Award for Outstanding Regional Theater, officially takes place tomorrow night, Friday, March 28, with the West Coast premiere of the last act of Lilka Cadison.
And we're pleased to have with us in studio today one of the show's stars, Mindy Sterling, as well as one of the play's co-producers and co-authors, Abby Phillips. I love names I can pronounce.
Yes.
It's great.
We get some doozies in.
But before we introduce you to these lovely and talented women, let me ask you, Michael, let's throw some applause their way.
Yeah. Welcome, ladies.
And but before we chat with our guest today, Michael, how was your week?
You know, another productive week. I mean, it was busy with theater stuff and also, of course...
Don't lose me in the jargon with your details there. Theater stuff.
Theater things, you know.
You must be a radio host, are you?
I know, right? I'm involved in a new production of Into the Woods, which is going up by 3D Theatricals, our friends down there in Orange County, who are one of the most forward, fantastic... Fantastic producers now of musical theater in Southern California.
And it's a family.
Broadway
right?
style. I mean, it is. You feel like you are. What? Where
it's
am I?
Only,
am I in New York?
It's not only Broadway style, it's Broadway quality.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Incredible play. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. All right. So that's something I've been diving into and spending a lot of time with. And then, of course, you know, the nightclub every weekend. I have a nightclub here called Sterling's upstairs at the Federal in North Hollywood, which is in the NoHo Arts District.
Yes.
And it is dedicated to presenting the best of Broadway performers in concert.
Nice.
And also nightclub artists who are dedicated to the Great American Songbook and pop and so forth. So.
Wow. Wow. You know what I did? Clean my grout. That's what I did. That's what I did.
Really?
You have this magical life, and I'm cleaning grout with Mr. Clean Magic.
But your grout looks so much better for it.
Yes, it does.
It?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've been often called out for my grout.
Oh, you have. And how was your week?
It was good. It was good. You know, just keeping busy. Excited to go. The film that we worked on, we go to the College Town Film Festival on April 16th, 17th, and 18th. Saris and I, Saris Mirakor is the director of the short film, and they've asked us to speak after the film, do a Q&A at... College Town Film Festival is this sort of nomadic festival that goes to different colleges. So we're going to Penn State, and that's in April. And then we're going to Ohio University and hopefully Cal State Northridge.
Fantastic.
Talking to them
this is a state a film about bullying, if Paul hasn't told you. But,
And it's
fantastic film.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it. I
mean,
you're
working
yes,
it
like
as
that's
an
assumed,
actor,
but
is also fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Michael.
You're welcome.
So very excited about that. And going to see Tony and Tina's Wedding, which I did the original Chicago production of.
Yeah.
I'm going to see the new one in New York. Because I have my friends, it's the same group of producers that are doing it, Joe Corcoran and team. So I'm very excited. I'm going to stop in New York and see Tony and Tina's.
Where is that going to be?
It's right in Times Square. They have a church right off Times Square, and then the The reception is at Guy Fieri's American Kitchen and Bar, which apparently is right there, but supposed to be a hoot. So we'll see.
You know what? Your lives are so wonderful. I'm just going to Ross when I leave here.
Really?
It's just right across the street.
Really?
Yeah, Abby and I will be going to Ross.
I brought my own bag.
Yeah. Good.
You have to now, or else they shoot you.
Yes.
The look that they give. Let's talk to our guests here. We're just babbling on and on.
Absolutely.
The beautiful statue.
Give Mindy the. Give Mindy. Mindy. Mindy.
Mindy.
Like that?
Mindy.
Mindy.
Mindy. Yes. Mindy. Give Mindy the intro. She is so due.
Best known for her character portrayal of Frau Farbissina.
Good.
Yes, in the Austin Powers trilogy. Our first guest is a veteran improviser, improv teacher, and a director, skills she honed with the critically acclaimed Groundlings group in Los Angeles. She will reprise her role as Janice Nugent, Billy and Steve's mom on the FXX TV hit series Legit, which is currently enjoying its second season. You can see her on Disney's Ant Farm, playing the self-absorbed principal, Skidmore. She can also be seen on iCarly as the mean teacher, Miss Briggs. She is the voice of...
Sensing a theme!
Yes, very much so.
She is the voice of Lieutenant Lin...
Beifong,
thank you, on the Nickelodeon animated series Legend of Korra, as well as many other animated series. She has guest starred in Raising Hope, Two Broke Girls, Desperate Housewives, Curb Your Enthusiasm, My Name is Earl, King of Queens, and many others. Her memorable film credits include Mars Needs Moms, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, Drop Dead Gorgeous, and Reno 911. Please welcome the delightful Mindy Sterling.
One loud applause, Dave.
Take Mindy's headset down.
Very just glamorous. Thank you, Abby. Yes, I'm huge.
Huge
right now.
First of all, let me tell you, I'm such a fan of your work.
Thank you.
And I watch you on the Ant Farm. And ask me why I'm watching.
Well, it's either you have children, grandchildren, or the rest of the television sucks.
None of the above. None of the above. And this is why.
What a promo. Right? You've done this before.
It's so true, though. Because I do. I get adults all the time that watch it because I'll go, oh, so you have kids? No. Yeah. No, I just like the show.
Yeah,
I like Disney.
Exactly.
All right.
It was by happenstance. I moved into a new home. The cable people came. They put all the TVs in. I went to bed that night super tired, but I turned on the TV and, you know, to kind of like calm down. And they had it set on the Disney Channel. And it's
that's
the first time I had
down.
Seen any... programming on the Disney Channel.
Oh, how funny.
Of their more recent years.
Yes.
And I was very, very taken aback at how well written it is,
wow.
Number one. How well cast it is, number two. I mean, the two young ladies on that series and that young boy.
Yes.
They are very, very special talents.
And all the guests and stuff, it's really special. I mean,
these kids are you know, like 40 years old, because I mean, they understand exactly what they're doing in comedy and they sing and they dance and they do it all.
I'm
There's
so
good
I'm
writers on
very
on
good.
Yeah,
all those
great writers.
And, some Looking Glass ensemble members
really?
That write for Disney Family.
Oh wow, there you go.
So it's so great. It's nice to see that caliber of Disney, and also they have become much more contemporary and they are current with, you know, themes that go on with
topical
children.
Themes,
but also they don't stay away from. They don't shy away from things that are
specific to kids. I'm still getting over the fact that you watch a Disney Channel to calm down.
I know
that was off-putting.
Well, you know,
said, I turn on the TV to calm down. What preceded it that you had to calm down?
It was really within a reference to the moving in day.
Oh, okay, which is a stressful day, certainly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to
really
too
tired
much into
and then I perked right up when I saw this and saw this lady do a very, very funny.
I was the kooky school principal that they all made fun of and love to just beat me up and bully me. But then again,
favorite,
I did
my
it.
My favorite
that
is when you posed for the portrait. Oh, how funny was that? As an English schoolgirl, she
yes.
That's how she saw herself.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they also, you know, they also made a big statue of me that is in the casting office.
Oh, really?
So when people would go in and audition, they would like text me, Mindy, guess who I saw? So there's this huge, like, bronze statue in the office of Disney.
Wow.
Hysterical.
It's very funny.
Not everybody can say that.
When Bryan Cranston, Breaking Bad, when he went to Comic-Con and was able to walk the whole field of, you know, wherever, through the whole convention, because he wore his own mask. He wore a mask, like a full head mask of his character on Breaking Bad,
and
just
walked
around,
yeah,
and everyone thought it was
great.
Someone being Walter White. And
that's great.
I'm doing that now.
Are you? I didn't want to say
He's
anything.
He's got a mask on.
But the tape, work on the tape.
Because it's got a lot of work done as well.
It's the old Lucy thing.
A little work done. Oh, what I heard a great line about that Martin Short said. Martin Short said, you know, I'm not going to go under the knife. I'm not going to do the whole thing for the plastic surgery. He said, because no one looks at a 60-year-old and says, hey, who's that hot 37-year-old? They say, who's that 60-year-old who's been in a fire?
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Hey, Martin. That's great.
Isn't that a great line? Mindy, the last act of Lilka Kadison, and without giving too much away, and can you give us a little bit of a synopsis to sort of tease our listeners to let them know why they should come see the production?
Well, to see me. No, there's only four of us in the show, and I'm playing an 87-year-old woman, so there you go. No, it's a really, really lovely play about a woman's memories and how they sort of are haunting her through World War II. And I'm on stage the entire time in a chair, and I go in and out of consciousness because I'm medicated, because I'm dying, right?
But you crack jokes.
I do, yeah. It's not like, you're not going to, like, you know, leave and want to slit your wrist, but you will hopefully cry.
The music is by Leonard Cohen. We've got a...
The costume changes are amazing.
It's in the dark.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no...
But she, she's sort of haunted by some of, like, ghosts from her past, and in particular this one gentleman who was the love of her life back then, and how things just sort of change, and how your, you know, your life changes from, you know, from a circumstance, and certainly don't want to get into all of the details, right. But it's really a very beautiful, sweet sort of love story. You know, during World War II, and I'm trying to let out the memory that I had with this gentleman who really just wants to be remembered, and how I keep repressing it and not wanting to deal with it, and how he keeps haunting me too. Come on, tell everybody about me.
Is that memory, is that person in your memory a character as well in the play?
Yes, he's the love of my life.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you have a new love of your life in the play.
I have a new love.
You're a caregiver.
Yes. Oh, yes. I have a fabulous caregiver, Usman Ali, who we just go at it, and it's really, really fun, and he tries to help me, but I'm such a crabby, cranky, nasty.
They are so hilarious that I actually, you know, as they're rehearsing that I call them the Nichols and May,
yes,
of North Hollywood.
Yeah, Abby was commenting.
Really, I love that.
The gentleman's name again?
Usman Ali, and
he has quite a background.
Wonderful actor in Chicago. We brought him out from Chicago for this. And he just played Bagheera in Mary Zimmerman's and Disney's Jungle Book.
Okay.
Abby
was commenting on him before, when we were in the green room, before we came in here, and I just wanted to make sure that he was... We got his name out there and let people know.
The two of them together are quite charming.
We have a nice little rapport.
I'm curious about something, because I've done shows where I'm on stage the entire time from start to finish.
That's hard.
And that is what I want to know, because I just met you, but you strike me as a very animated, you know, energetic person. And you said not only are you on stage the whole time, but you're seated primarily?
I'm seated in a recliner that doesn't recline. And I get smaller and smaller, and I'm on stage while the other scenes are happening, so the light is on me because I'm having to, this is my memory, and it is really tough. I can't go to the bathroom, I can't look at my lines, I can't refresh myself, and so you have to be, you know, on the whole time. So luckily, I'm not, like, in every scene in terms of being the focus of every scene and having to talk and move and dance and sing. But
But you have to be present, yeah.
Oh, my
gosh,
yes. So, the whole time.
We did a show in Chicago called Oedipus Requiem. it was almost like an operatic thing with Blind Parrot Theater, this fantastic theater company that actually Tim Robbins was involved with at some point. But The interesting thing was Oedipus Requiem, when people would die, because everyone dies in Oedipus. At some point, everyone dies.
In general.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
But there was a death walk above in the back of the stage. So if you died in Act One, you had to go up on the walk and sort of observe all the rest of the action. So by the time, by the end of the show, that death walk is like
completely populated.
But you just have to be there and, you know.
And I have to watch. I have to watch the scenes. And it's just like, ugh, I gotta watch this again. I mean, no, they're fabulous people. But no, I love them. But no, I tease them all the time. But so you do. You watch everything and you're in there and you have to make it fresh like you've never done this before. Yeah.
No, I just find that to be, you know, when we did Kvetch here, which not the one that ran forever. We only did a 6-week run of it.
Do you often Kvetch or?
There's a lot of Kvetching going on.
Do you know the show Kvetch?
I've heard of it.
It's a fascinating show because you say your lines and then everyone freezes and all of the actors will turn and speak their actual subtext to the audience.
Oh, wonderful.
But you have to freeze. Like sometimes you freeze on another actor's word and sometimes you freeze through a whole paragraph and sometimes you freeze on a breath. And it is so manic. And you have to know, so interesting. You have to know the entire show from start to finish because you have to know everyone's lines because you have all this blocking on the other side.
I couldn't do it.
Flounding territory.
Lines. Lines. Oh my God. That's my weakness, you guys.
Really?
Oh my God. If I could do this whole show and do it in improv mode, I'd be very happy.
Really? Oh God.
I have a block. I don't know what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you always?
You guys
had,
are looking at me like
had difficulty.
What's wrong with you? Do you need to be hospitalized? Well, like you never have a memory lapse.
You know something? I could do with an hour's prep. I could do any show that I've ever done.
I can't even retain everything. I won't remember any of this tomorrow at all.
I didn't even know that.
No, I do. It's a curse. Maybe.
I think it's
When you're doing one show and the other lines come to you, it's definitely a curse.
Well, you know, I mean, the blessing of the other side of that is what she does so well, which is improv.
Yeah.
And that is hard to do. Well.
I think you have to have the confidence to do it and you have to know, you have to just put yourself out there. But I was also trained through the groundlings. I did that for years. And so that really built up a lot of those skills and the tools.
Mm-hmm. But Mindy, you bring, I think, you know, embracing that challenge, you bring a spontaneity and there's aliveness to that.
My actors never know what's going to come out of my mouth.
But is there wiggle room in this show? Do you have to be letter perfect? Or
Absolutely.
You do. They do.
Well, God love Abby.
God love Abby, who just, I'm sure, cringes every time I say something wrong. But no, you want to honor the words and you want to honor that. So I don't do it to just be an ass.
No, and the play is a
that just comes naturally.
Now. Yeah, she is like one big tuchus. She is the biggest tuchus. No, but the play is like a quartet, and it's very finely tuned where people are, you know, there's ghosts, and we have three different magic designers on it.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
We have toy theater happening. We have this great Susan Simpson, who teaches at CalArts and has a theater downtown called Automata in Chinatown, which is all puppet stuff. So she created this incredible toy theater that's part of this. Illusion design.
Oh, yeah,
music.
It's very cool.
So if you have four actors, and then the set is like a Chinese box that comes alive and people crawl in and out of it.
I'll just narrate the gesticulation. She's gesturing, ladies and gentlemen. It's a grand, Isadora Duncan-like moves.
Thank you. I've been aspiring to that. But so all of which is to say it would be important in terms of cues and timing.
The musicality of it.
No free balling.
Yeah, I love the Falcon space too because the playing area is so big in relationship to the seating area. A lot of times you get to these places and it's like a postage stamp stage.
We love the Falcon people and we love the stage. It's a little jewel box and it's very welcoming and you feel very creative and you can try things in those.
It's lovely. And the whole area, of course, Toluca Lake is lovely to be a part of that.
Yeah. Oh,
what's that great Thai place that's just down the street from there? It's like a... I don't It's a, there's a Thai sushi place that's walking distance.
Oh, yes, it's west of there.
Inda Thai or something? I got to remember. I got to look
that up.
No,
I don't eat Thai.
You don't eat Thai?
I don't.
Really?
I don't.
You
Chinese,
should
yes.
You should Thai it.
Oh, yeah.
The last act of Lilka
Cast.
Thank you.
We're having too much
fun. I'm trying
fun
to
here.
Promote your show here. The last act of Lilka Cadison will open tomorrow night at 8 p.m. That's Friday, March 28th, and continue through Saturday, April 19th. That is at the Falcon, as we've said, 4252 Riverside Drive in beautiful Toluca Lake. And the performance schedule, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 4. And for tickets, you can call the box office at 818-955-8101 or visit at them on the interweb at falcontheater.com. Theater is the R-E spelling, falcontheater.com. And we will, of course, throw that information out there a couple of more times before the end of the hour.
Perfect.
But
so how did you cast this woman? How did you cast this woman in this play?
Well, I auditioned. You know what that is. Oh, yes, I do.
You do?
Oh, yes, you do. Everybody auditions nowadays. So, yeah. And
see, I would just cast it by saying hello.
Mindy was no stranger. I've been a huge fan. I was so excited to meet her for the first time because I've loved her work forever. And Frau Farbissen, my mother loved Frau Farbissen.
Enough said.
And so we were very excited to meet her and contemplate all of the things that she could bring to this role so that it would be not a unidimensional lady on her last day of her life, but a full-bodied person that had a full life and had mostly a sense of humor was really important. You can't do a Jewish play without a
no,
very dark
no.
I was going to say, right?
I don't think you can.
I don't think there is one.
Yeah. I don't think there is a Jewish play without a good...
Because we're funny. We're funny. Yeah. We're funny people.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought so.
You well, know? I do.
What's that great line from? What's the great line from My Favorite Year? Oh no, great movie, Peter O'Toole.
You know, for someone who remembers a lot of things, you are failing.
What do you mean?
I have it.
Mark Lynn Baker,
yes.
And Peter O'Toole.
Oh wow!
And they're eating Chinese food, and he says, and she says, "Boy," and he goes, "This is dim sum," and he goes through the whole thing, and she goes, "Boy, you really know this stuff," and he goes, "Jews know two things." Suffering and where to get great Chinese food.
That's
and
great.
His mom was
Lainey Kazan.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Who we had on the show last year.
That's right.
Who was just an absolute hoot.
Dear Lainey.
Really enjoyed
yes.
That is a very underestimated, underappreciated movie, My Favorite Year. It's very
I know, but it's one of my favorites too.
So. My favorite film.
And
really?
The song, the title song, is also
well,
one of my
it,
favorites.
Oh, they made a musical out of it?
They did make a musical, but the title song of the film is different and was not in the musical on
oh,
Broadway.
I didn't
and
know that
it was not successful on Broadway.
Oh, it wasn't?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm.
That's strange.
Yeah.
Curious.
Short life.
Curious.
Sometimes that happens.
What?
Well, something does not
like
carry difference. Over. Yeah.
And you would know? Think it would be a great. It would like what's the Barry Manilow one? Harmony.
Harmony.
That's I've been reading a couple of things on that, and that's a little spotted.
It
right
is
now.
A little spotty, unfortunately. Yeah. I went to the opening, and I told you I liked it.
Yeah.
And I mean it's very Manilow in certain things, but you some things that he's written that you would never expect him to write either. But it's the story that is the book the merging of the book and the music just seemed to be lacking something, and I think it's a matter of just retooling it yet again because he's been working on this thing for about 15 years.
Oh really?
Oh
yeah.
My God!
Really?
Yeah. Well, it opened at the Alliance Theater in Atlanta this past year, and it did very well there. And then its mission was to open here, and the retooling then took place in between the two stops, and then to go to Broadway from here. But the critics were very mixed with their emotions.
It has
Los
powerful
Angeles.
Pieces to it, though. They,
very much, you know, but it was...
And the history is great.
It's a fascinating
guys,
tale of yeah. These guys, the harmonic comedians or something? Is it
comedian? Yeah, the harmonists.
The harmonists, yes.
Okay.
That's what they're called. Yeah. And they, you know, true story, very, very interesting. But it was, you know, people felt that it was kind of cabaret meets Jersey Boys critics said the Jersey Boys.
yeah. My God.
Wow.
You know,
isn't it funny though?
Yes.
Isn't it funny though? How many times people have to do that? They always have to find another labeled thing, and just go, okay, it's part A and part B, because it's so much easier to just stamp label on things and rather decide. It's one of the reasons that I like my musical interests are always really offbeat people that draw, like Tom Waits and Leonard Cohen. They don't really draw Loudon Wainwright, another great one.
We share many things.
Do we? Do we?
Wow.
I'm just reading the card you hold up. That's all I'm doing.
I was going to say, our play, which covers a similar time period, and it's Eastern Europe and the Valley, right here in the Valley, right here, covers similar themes and material, but we worked very hard and honed it, you know, in Looking Glass for quite a few years, but it's 80 minutes and change. Wow. And it runs through massive amounts of history and people's lives and lots of jokes and
so
music.
It's lean and
it's
tight,
lean and,
yeah.
I won't say it's mean. Cause
you no, lean.
No, I know, I was...
Oh, you said mean.
Yes.
You said mean and then you said
wasn't. I always go that one extra step. But it's
now it's more a Martha Graham thing with the arms. I didn't want to promote.
I wish everyone could see what she's doing now. She's on point. She just looks gorgeous when she bends. Oh, my. There's the back.
Oh, for a webcam. Oh, for a webcam. Michael, we should do our arts calendar.
We should.
And we'll continue chatting with Abby and Mindy here. I will kick it off, if that's okay with you. A young painter must reconcile his remarkable artistic gifts with the austerity and singular devotion required by his faith. Stephen Sachs directs the Los Angeles premiere of Aaron Posner's award-winning stage adaptation of Chaim Potok's, I hope I have that right, acclaimed novel, My Name is Asher Lev, opening February 22nd at the Fountain Theater, set in Brooklyn's Hasidic Jewish community. Asher Lev is the powerful story of a young man's struggle to become an artist at any cost, against the will of his parents, community, and tradition. Exploring questions of art, family, religion, and loyalty, this extraordinary adaptation is a compelling look at the price of individuality. On stage now, My Name is Asher continues through April 19th with performances Thursday and Friday evenings at 8, Sundays at 2, tickets $34. Discounts are available for seniors and students, and the fountain is located at 5060 Fountain Avenue, oddly enough, in Los Angeles. Secure on-site parking is available. Reservations 323-663-1525 or fountaintheater.com. Theater, once again, has the R-E spelling.
Indeed. Sounds interesting. Huh?
I would say, as a former Hebrew school teacher, you did pronounce that.
I did, okay. Chaim?
Good.
Yeah. You know what? I wanted to tell a quick story about Fountain. I have the Dick Cavett box set, the Hollywood Legends, where he interviews Betty Davis and all this.
Yes.
And he asks her if she has any advice for actresses in Hollywood. And she says, take Fountain.
So
that's great.
Absolutely.
That is true.
Till this day.
In another part of our great city, Doris and Me is one man's quirky, lovable obsession with music and movie icon Doris Day. As the ultimate obsessed fan, musical theater star Scott Dreyer makes Doris and Me more than just a typical tribute show to a timeless artist, taking the audience with him on a sentimental journey to nostalgic times gone by. Through classic treasured songs, Scott lovingly shares personal anecdotes, humor, heart, and many Doris Day stories and history, never letting the audience forget how much he admires the icon and why he became her biggest fan. Scott entertains with 26 of Miss Day's songs, including Sentimental Journey, Que Sera Sera, and Secret Love. Scott Dreyer dazzled Cabrillo Music Theater audiences during its recent main stage production of the jukebox musical Forever Plaid, and with Miss Day's 91st birthday, Paul. 91st birthday
91?
Coming up on April 1st.
Is she going to be there?
I actually saw photographs of her today on the internet at the age of 90, which was a big birthday last year, of course. Scott Dreyer's Doris and Me will take place on Sunday, March 30th at 7 p.m. in the Founders Room of the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. To purchase tickets in benefit of Cabrillo Music Theater's Beyond the Footlights Community Outreach Program in synergy with Doris Day's longtime devotion to the rescue of animals and animal rights, simply call 805-497-8613 or visit Cabrillo Music Theater, also with an R-E, .com, CabrilloMusicTheater.com.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Nice stuff to see.
How did Doris Day look?
She looked her age. She looked her age. She looked fragile and she looked her age.
I loved her.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved her.
I was an actor as a kid and I did her TV show.
Oh.
Yeah, I was a feature girl.
And also dated Sally Field, which
my other girl.
Yeah.
Was this before The Flying Nun?
It was right in the transition between Gidget and The Flying Nun.
And it was on The Dating Game. And it was set up on The Dating Game.
I was the first boy to ever pick a girl on The Dating Game.
Respect.
Awesome.
Respect.
Isn't that incredible?
Love it.
I just love his tales.
That's great.
If we have time at the end of the show, Michael, you have to tell him about meeting the Beatles. That's my
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Our next guest, Abby Phillips, has always enjoyed spinning yarns herself as well as encouraging others in that divine enterprise. What began as reconstructing facts into narrative as an environmental engineer progressed to choir director and teacher. She then made a sharp left turn as a co-founder of Every Picture Tells a Story and Storyopolis, two innovative Los Angeles gallery slash bookstore slash salons that celebrated storytelling in all media. This inevitably led to the circuitous, gravity-defying path of producing film, animation, and public radio programs. She started Listen Up Radio with her oldest friend, Johanna Cooper, and together they created the radio series One People, Many Stories. Thus began the story of how once upon a time, Abby wandered through a looking glass, fell down a rabbit hole, and encountered those incredible people of the Water Tower. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to the co-producer and co-author of the last act of Lilka Cadison, opening tomorrow night, March 28th. Michael, thank you for all the commas you put into this for me at the Falcon Theater, Miss Abby Phillips.
Hello, Abby.
And now it's going to be dance. The next thing is dance.
That's the only thing left, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, we had a very, very interesting chat before we came in here today, and as much of it that you can share about sort of the formative story that informs this story. Can you share some of that in terms of how you this tale came to be?
Sure, sure. First of all, I was in regards to that creative bio. The Water Tower is where the Looking Glass Theater is currently in the beautiful Water Tower building.
Water Tower Place, right on Michigan Avenue in Chicago.
So it's kind of a poetic... description of the
Just wanted people to know that we didn't just go south on Alice in Wonderland and this. I don't remember the Water Tower. I remember the March
Hare. She was being very creative.
But I don't remember the Mad Hatter and the Water Tower. I don't remember.
There were drugs involved. But there were no drugs involved.
Go ask Alice.
The play itself was developed at Looking Glass Theater in Chicago, which is my favorite place to even think about creating work because they have this wonderful collective mentality that and people write, direct, and play, and they know how to develop things together.
So it's a true workshop environment. A lot of people say they workshop a production, but it's a true collaborative. Yeah.
Right, and the bones of the play began as a radio series that my friend Johanna and I produced for public radio, which was the great Jewish tales from around the world, from Africa and Persia and Eastern Europe and even the United States. And we went to the Righteous Persons Foundation and applied for a grant to see if we could theatricalize it, because we like to theatricalize things. We're very dramatic. And we received this grant, and... it seemed like the clearer thing to do would be to take it to Chicago. And we worked on it for a while, and we soon lost my friend to breast cancer. And during that time, as we were trying to figure out how you make a series of stories into compelling drama, it turns out it's kind of a challenging effort, that stories need to have a reason to be told. My parents died, other people's grandparents died, babies were born, my kids grew up, and we came upon this framework that I realized after I had written the entire thing that was really based on my mother's life. And I grew up right here on these blocks on Valley Heart Drive. And
right in this neighborhood.
Wow.
And, I was saying... We rode our bikes, to Bob's Big Boy, and we snuck into Disney Studios at night and drove by Bugs' house at Warner Brothers, and kind of grew up in that milieu. And my mom was part of that.
Your parents?
My mother was a pianist and a music teacher, and my dad was a pediatrician that made house calls in this very rich neighborhood, which I was telling you. At the time that I was growing up post-war, it was filled with émigrés and blacklisted writers and émigré artists and musicians and magicians and cowboys and stunt guys. We used to horseback ride with you know, stunt guys on their days off. And it was just this very rich and artistic environment of people that had come to this end of the valley to try and work in the music and the studio system. So there were studio violinists and seamstresses, and they all had these amazing backstories of surviving, World War II in one way or another. So it was very dramatic and evocative.
What a time to grow up.
Really, I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Did you know then, you know how sometimes you have memories that there's certain things that happened to me when I was a child that I knew while they were happening that they would be treasured memories for me. They were that visceral. They affected me that much. Did you feel that way then?
You described that very well, my friend. Yes. And in particular, like Disney, like, was just larger than life, because we would watch Walt on TV every Sunday, and we lived right next to it.
Night music that would play right before Mutual of Omaha's Wild
there
Kingdom.
There you go, with our TV trays and all of that. So that's where Mindy lives on Wednesday through Sunday nights, is in a little house in this
full
valley,
of crap.
Full of hermit. It's a very densely designed set that is sort of shows the landscape of her mind and her memories, because she's not coming forth with all of her secrets and memories, which she really needs to reveal before she
the end of the play, before I die.
Before the end of the play.
Abby, how did you... I'm sorry to interrupt you. Maybe I should save this for after the rest of your explanation, but I'm fascinated how you and the Falcon Theater got together on this project.
Well, it was a happy... the Valley... And I would say Los Angeles is really a small village. I think you guys feel the same way. And the Valley is very much the same. And after we had this very successful run in Chicago, and we wanted to continue to grow the play and refine it and bring it to L.A. where it is based, talking with some of the founders of Looking Glass, they went to Northwestern with Kathleen Marshall, who is the daughter of Gary Marshall,
of course,
who runs the theater. So we looked at theaters here, and then we said, we got to go talk to Kathleen. And she was very receptive and warm, had great feelings about Looking Glass and was interested in bringing Looking Glass here.
And we were talking about Chicago theater before, and you said that how well the show was received in Chicago, which is no small accomplishment, because Chicago never really gets its due as a phenomenal theater town. And everyone thinks that, well, one of these things will come to Chicago and, they'll be so grateful that they brought it to Chicago. Chicago is a hard audience. Those people, you don't get standing ovations or good attendance in Chicago, because unless something is very, very good. I've done shows there that have been successful. I've done shows there that have not been successful. And it's no rube audience. It is a very sophisticated theatrical audience there. So
it was amazingly satisfying, and who knew? We kind of just threw it up in the air, and I've never even had this experience, because this is my first theatrical venture. I've been in film and in animation before that, but it ran for 11 weeks very successfully with great reviews. And then I was saying that this is a very specific story, and it ended up, much to my surprise retrospectively, to be very close to my heart. But in Chicago, I was saying, on Michigan Avenue, we had people from South Dakota and from Asia and from all over the world coming, and they're saying, my God, we love this play so much, and how did you wrote my mother. That was my mother. That was my grandmother. And that's the most satisfying part of it.
You didn't do the Chicago production?
No.
Okay, no. I was just going to say, did the actress who played the role in Chicago, did she encounter the same, like, was there any sort of talk back or an opportunity for audiences to talk to the character?
Sure.
Or the actress?
Yeah, that was Marilyn Dodd-Frank, who's just a wonderful Chicago main grand dame
Stalwart,
of theater.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. And Looking Glass is a nonprofit, kind of municipally supported theater. Rahm Emanuel came and loved it. He came a couple of times. And they have a whole program of community outreach, and we even went out into the community with it, and we had a workshop. We had talkbacks with caregivers. We had artists that came and did talkbacks, and
Okay. You know, it's so topical. I mean, it's always aging parents are always going to be a topical thing, but especially now, it seems like this has such a broad appeal on so many levels, on a familial level, on a cultural level. I really want to go see this, Michael.
I know.
I'm committing to that on the air.
Oh, well, good.
Because you know how I always say, well, I'm committing to it on the air, so hold me to this.
I will hold you to this.
We have four just extraordinary actors, and these two young ingenues.
Oh, amazing.
It's our first plays. Well, Nick, I think, was a child actor.
He did, yeah, he did a child actor.
But they are just so impressive, the two youngers.
I want to find their names to give them recognition.
Nicholas Cutro.
Yeah. And it's Brittany. We don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Right.
Sorry,
the first,
Brittany.
They're right in the top.
Miale.
Usman Ali. Mm-hmm.
That's the guy.
That's
the guy that plays the healthcare assistant.
Oh, okay. I got you. And I'm looking through.
He's
the
fabulous.
It cut off on the top of the page.
With
Michael.
His own secret. He comes to this with his own challenges and secrets and sense of humor. Nicholas Cutro is Benary Adler, her big love.
My big love, yes, who wants, you know, to be remembered. And I don't want to do it.
Brittany Womomiali, I think.
Something like that. She's
I'm
amazing.
I'm so sorry. But she's extraordinary. She's a young, feisty woman. The younger...
Younger me.
The younger version of...
Well, people can find out all that at falcontheater.com.
And you also have other co-writers with you in this project.
We are. We do, because, I always get nailed on that, but I say it with pride because this is the process at Looking Glass, yeah. And I just want to be honest about it. We all worked on it for a long time.
So Nicola Berman, David Kersner, Heidi Stillman, and Andy White, right?
Yes. David Kersner, Heidi Stillman, and Andrew White are all founding members of Looking Glass, and Andrew White is the artistic director, and Heidi Stillman is the director of new work.
Looking Glass is a... I was in Chicago from 1987 to 1996, and Looking Glass just really came into its own, I think. I was lucky enough to see sort of it really...
Well, they produce all over the country, though, don't they?
They're starting to. Yeah. But you know, I was saying right before we launched the play, they won the Tony for Best Regional Theater, so that was fun. And then they tour with their initial big hit, which was Looking Glass Alice, and it's hopefully going to come to Los Angeles
soon. Oh, really? Well, the show that we are talking about right now is called The Last Act of Lilka Katteson, and that is opening tomorrow night at the Falcon Theater, as we mentioned.
That's with Mindy Sterling.
With Mindy Sterling. No relation.
Well, you don't
we
know
We don't
that.
Know.
What?
We don't, you don't know
yeah,
that.
You don't know that for
we
sure.
We could be married. You know, in Hollywood, things have to be kept secret sometimes.
I'm telling Sally Fields. It's awesome. 42 Falcon Theater is 4252 Riverside in Burbank, across from Bob's Big Boy.
We love that Bob's Big Boy.
And, go have dinner, then come see us.
For tickets, falcontheater.com. That's the RE spelling, Falcon Theater. Or you could call their box office, 818-955-8101. That's 818-955-8101. This is a fascinating, I'm very interested.
I know.
Come on down.
It's worth it. It really is really a sweet, exciting, interesting play.
Well, I would love to just see you on stage. First of all, let's start there. And
then
the play sounds fantastic. So.
And I say if you are a mother or if you had a mother, then you'll get some laughs out of it and you'll like the play. So it's, any of those people,
yes.
It's for you.
We've all had mothers.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
My mother has a new thing that she's doing now, which is that,
what is that?
She, my mother has become...
Well, first of all, give the ladies...
My mother's become the queen of the non sequitur. Yeah. Which is just like, you know, you just get, you know, I'll say, so Monica and I are going to come out at holiday time. I think we're probably going to come out the beginning of December because we usually get a break on the airline. So I think it'll be fun. I think we'll have a good time. Do you know if you leave the pit in the avocado that it stays green?
Yes.
Just, oh, look at the time.
They don't
I'm
listen.
There already. That's me. You're talking about... I had that conversation this morning with my kids.
We cannot focus.
I just don't hold up anything shiny when you're talking to my mom.
I just say to my kids, is that a problem? Yeah. What's your issue? Can't you track?
We're at that time, Michael.
We are. We have to baptize you.
Oh,
yes.
All right.
It's time that we like
Here's
to ask our guests about something that happened, some embarrassing or
awkward.
Or something that went wrong during performance, whether it was in a film or in television or in live theater or any any tales of woe that you have had over the
I fell off the stage once. I did. I was doing community theater out here. I was in Gypsy.
Was it a Pepsi commercial? Or?
No, it was. It was so this low key, just community theater, and I was playing Dainty June. Yes, and I don't see very well, and especially in the blackout. And I had said, okay, when there's a blackout, somebody has to come on stage and literally take my hand and pull me off because I can't see and I freak out. Well, they didn't. They were signed to and they weren't there. So I started walking and I walked right off stage into the pit of the orchestra. Oh. And everyone said, all they can hear, can I say a swear word?
Yes.
Okay. All I yelled was, fuck! And in the blackout, that's what everybody heard. And I was fine, but that was that's like almost drowning. It was like the most frightening moment of
my
life.
But you could have been really injured.
Yes, I could have.
Yeah, she could have. She owns the theater now.
Yes. Yeah. Big lawsuit.
But did you hit any musicians or?
I don't think so. I think I was able to get right back up again, because your adrenaline is going and you're like, I got to go off stage and change my outfit. But that was pretty nasty.
I saw Jimi Hendrix do that at my first date, but he fell.
But Jimi Hendrix, you dated Jimmy?
No, but we were so close.
Yeah, wow. But,
he fell into the pool.
Things like that happen. Yeah,
yeah. He fell into the what?
There used to be the
reflecting pool in front of the stage.
He was in the pool. But he kept his guitar above his head.
Really? Wow, that's so. And so
that
it was wasn't
my first and only date as a teenager because I didn't come home till late.
But I mean, it was an electric guitar, so that could have been really.
It was.
That could have been bad.
Could have been bad, but he was masterful in every way.
Wow. You saw Hendrix, and here I thought I was going to impress you with the Beatles.
Oh, the Beatles. We want to hear that.
We're impressed.
But Hendrix, wow. Wow. That's.
Yeah, that would be pretty darn exciting.
Is that my chair?
No, it's mine. I'm moving in.
No, I just thought it was my.
She's
bag.
Moving and grooving. She's getting restless.
So is that your?
My.
You produce so many things. You have to have some sort of.
I do fine in performance. It's the rest of the life. The bull in the china shop. I got here and it was great.
I have a friend who's very similar to that, and I call him a 747. Because the reason he's 747 is because when he's on the ground, he knocks things over and he takes a whole lot of space to turn around and he'll injure people and all this. But when he's aloft, which is where he's supposed to be, you see what he's designed to do. And so that is the way.
Interesting.
So, much like the swan or the crane.
Yes.
Beautiful flying birds.
Yes.
Yes. She's very animated, isn't she?
She is.
Our
she
guest,
is.
Abby.
Hey, Michael, can you consolidate the Beatles?
I can.
Story?
I can. I mean, the foundation of my business, first of all, is publicity, public relations, and production. And I've handled many, many great musical acts through time. And George Harrison was one of them. Really, I was very young. But we toured the country, and he was the first Beatle to tour. So it was a really amazing.
Independently of that.
Independently, yeah. An amazing opportunity to be involved with. And unfortunately, it was during some darker times in his life where he was also involved with a young lady who he married, who he's married to. And
a lovely lady.
Yes. But it was hard then because there were things involved that were distracting him. And we opened the tour with Ravi Shankar, for example. Mm-hmm. Yes, Ravi Shankar.
My brother ran his school here. And worked with
him. Really?
Well, Ravi was doing 90 minutes and George was doing 30. So that's how we started off.
Correct.
And it was.
I know what you're talking about.
It was all sold out, and people on radio were saying, hey, if you have tickets to George Harrison concert, try to sell them because you're not going to see much of George. It was one of those things. Anyhow, very, very strenuous tour for me as a publicist, doing a lot of damage control with that. At any rate, end of tour, we've done Washington, D.C., we've been the president. I arranged for him to go to see the president and talk about Bangladesh and anything I could think of to get the emphasis off of what had happened. But it was now a solid George Harrison tour. Madison Square Garden, last night, everybody comes up on stage, he calls them, including me, singing My Sweet Lord. All I'm thinking about is getting on the plane.
the next day because I want to come home. And he and I had very little conversation. When we did, it was fairly heated because he didn't want to do any of these things until after the White House. Then he kind of calmed down. But we hadn't spoken, and I go back to the Plaza Hotel where we're staying and go to my room. I'm packing, and it's super late, and I just can't wait to get on the plane. I get the phone rings, and it's his manager, Dennis O'Brien at the time. And he says, Michael, will you come up to the suite, to Georgia's suite? I said, what? Why? He said, just come on up. Just come on up. So I go up, and Dennis answers the door, and he goes, like, he motions me into the living room of the suite, and I turn into the living room, and there is George and Ringo and John and Paul. And I hung with them until my plane it's going to take off. And it was George's way of saying to me, which he said in front of them, I'm so sorry I caused you so much, you know, problem and pain in this tour, but this is hopefully my way of being
back. Thank you. Oh, awesome. What a great story.
The unsung publicist, the hardest job.
Yeah.
A little, and he does it very well. Michael has done publicist work for me for a number of productions.
That's pretty amazing.
We have to go, but I want to throw this information out there one more time. This is the last act of Lilka Cadison. This opens tomorrow night at the Falcon Theater. FalconTheater.com. Tickets also at 818-955-8101. It's not an especially long run. It's only running through April 19th. Is that correct? So mm-hmm. Get tickets early and often. Ladies, what a distinct pleasure to have
absolutely
both of you.
Absolutely a joy.
Thank you. It's so nice to meet you guys.
Thank you. Thanks.
And see you next week, Michael.
Yes, sir. On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley. Right here on LA Talk Radio.